IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello everyone, I am Sarthak and I welcome you to All Things Policy. Along with me, I have our in-house physician, Dr. Harshit. So a few days back, what happened was we were having an informal conversation. Harshit pointed out that in case of India, if doctors have to practice in a particular place, they require multiple approvals. And some of these approvals are at the level of the union government. And then some of these approvals are at the level of states. And which also implies that if they have to practice in different states in India, they again have to take these approvals in each of these corresponding states. So this got us thinking about the role of union and the state in providing for health in India. What do they do? What are their specific responsibilities? So in this episode, we will discuss about these things. What is the role of union in healthcare? What is the role of states in healthcare? What is the rationale behind all these things? How there is some minimum amount of coordination, cooperation between them, and also what are some of the challenges that arise out of it. So Harshit, welcome to All Things Policy, and this is the first episode that we are doing together.
Hey Sarthak, how are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks. So Harshit, the first thing, when it comes to the constitutional assignment, right? As per the constitution, there are certain things that the union is supposed to do. There are certain things which the state is supposed to do. And then there are some subjects which are kind of the joint responsibility, or rather anyone can take it up. The union can take it up or the state can take it up. And there also the union might get preference if it has a law and state also has a law. So when it comes to this health sector, how are the different kinds of tasks divided?
So basically, the responsibility of public health at large, sanitation, hospital dispensaries, is the responsibility of the respective state government. According to the state list, the union government is supposed to take care of interstate quarantine, port quarantine, basically seeing that infections do not travel from one state to another or from outside to India. And in the concurrent list, in which both of them share joint responsibilities, medical professions and everything related to medical education comes in this list. So as we saw in the time of COVID, union government was leading the response to COVID. So managing pandemics, managing quarantine, managing infections and not letting them spread from one state to another, managing a medical emergency at that scale, that is the responsibility of the central government. So in short, health on paper, at least according to what was thought at the time of writing the constitution, is the responsibility of the state.
And there are also certain other dimensions related to health, right? For example, population control, family planning, right? So I think these are also part of the concurrent list, or is it? I don't think it's the sole responsibility of the state government, because at the union level, we have all these policies. Right? What should be the, how should we go for population stabilization? And this used to be a thing way back, maybe in the 1970s, 1980s. Now again, we don't see all these things in the news quite often, but there also, I think the union does have a role to play. Apart from that, certain institutions, which are considered to be the institutions of national importance, institutions for providing professional technical training, they're also under the domain of the national government.
Yeah. Population control and family planning comes under the concurrent list. So it is basically the responsibility of both the state and the government, and anybody can take it up. So that is why there are population policies and at the national level.
Yeah. So the thing that we are mentioning, right, at the time of drafting the constitution, they would have had some discussions, deliberations around all these things, right? What should be whose responsibility, and they would have come up with this. So what is the underlying rationale behind some of these things? For example, why, when it comes to public health, hospitals, dispensaries, sanitation, these are things which, again, maybe which are things which are under the state subject, state list, right? What could be the reason why these things are under the state list? Why states have a significant role to play here?
Yeah, I think one of the major reasons could be because health is very variable across local levels and very variable across domains. So they would want this, at least at the time of writing, they would want that there should be a feedback loop, and everyday doings of people should be under the control of state, and everything which requires interstate sort of coordination or requires any international output, such as national security and everything else, goes to be the responsibility of the center. So anything related to the everyday sort of things which are not affected, which do not require a very large interstate, a major contribution of interstate coordination, comes under the state list. I think, Sarthak, what do you think? What can be the rationale behind this? Why put public health in the state list?
So again, I'm not sure how they have defined public health, but what they have said is public health, hospitals, dispensaries, all these things, right? They have included it. Now, again, purely if I look at it from economics perspective, as you were just mentioning, there is massive amount of diversity in preferences here. So if you have a government which is nearer to you, it is easier for the government to find out what is the specific preference. Like if you have a union government, let's say it's in Delhi, and again, the country is huge. So people sitting in Delhi, if they're administering it, it might be difficult for them to find out the exact preferences of people in maybe the north parts of India or the northeastern, extreme northeastern parts of India, or extreme north of India or south of India. So it is easier to get the information about the specific requirements of the people. And second thing is all the different kinds of transaction costs will also be minimized. There, again, to get information, you have to spend some amount of money. So getting idea about what is the preference of the people will be easier. Secondly, accountability wise also, if you have the administrators, leaders near you, right, you can hold them. I mean, it's easier for people to hold them accountable. So as compared to a situation where you are getting the services far away, like some thousands kilometer away. So maybe these could have been the reasons why these kind of services are under the state list.
Yeah, so basically accountability, the transaction cost of information, yeah, and the diversity in preferences and local
preferences,
conditions.
Yeah. So one, and also, but yeah, all these things also reflect the fact that when it comes to setting long-term goals or when it comes to creating some frameworks, the union is having a more significant role to play, right? For example, population policies or the other thing, right? Family planning, all these things. The union is having a significant role to play. And also when it comes to medical education, which in turn impacts how services will be delivered, because it is at the end of the day, the medical professionals who provide for these services, right? Or the different kinds of institutions. Some of these institutions are of national importance. They are all under the union list. So there, the union is playing a significant role. Now, maybe here the union wants some form of uniformity, or the state wanted some form of uniformity. Mm-hmm. So again, they're trying to balance both diversity of customers or consumers' preferences, and at the same time, some uniformity at some level. Some uniform level of services should be there through the length and breadth of the country, because of which they have this. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I think in regards to medical education, they also want interoperability. They want sort of a doctor trained in Karnataka to be able to work in Gujarat, except the local language issue. That is why till now medical education was in English. So it makes interoperability very easier. So yeah, I think interoperability was also one of the big issues. And they also want to have some minimum standard of training for everybody. So, and the center wanted to fix it. The union wanted to fix it. So for education and everything, I think interoperability is a sort of a big reason too.
Yeah. So that day you were talking about how if a doctor has to practice, right, has to get multiple approvals, right? So a part of it is at the union level, but then certain kind of requirements are also at the state level, right? What is that specific requirement at the state level, right? Why do they need to register themselves at the state level?
Yeah, so the rationale I was able to gather was that, first of all, statistics. They want to know how many doctors are presently working there. And they also want to be able to have the clinician practicing in the state to have an address, so that, for instance, if there's some certain kind of maybe a case against them, maybe there's a malpractice suit, they be able to better tackle it, send them summons, or like better be able to trace it. But there are loopholes to all these reasons. First of all, statistics. If you want statistics, for instance, I'm registered in DMC as well as Karnataka, and I'll be counted in both. And this is sort of before I wanted to get registered in Karnataka, I had to get an NOC from Delhi. So this is a legal way. And now I'm being double counted.
NOC
and
from so Delhi, I'm, that means NOC from the union government, right?
No. This is Delhi state. After you pass, there is no... The union government sets the requirements for the exam, the curriculum. And after that, it takes registrations for certain things. There are different, for instance, union government sets the NABH and NABL regulations. That is regulations for hospitals and labs, which help them get union funding. And basically, if they want to apply for patients who are getting union insurance and things like that. So they have to meet, hospitals and other establishments have to meet those standards. So for registrations, there is state approvals. But for registrations for clinics and hospitals, if you want to establish a hospital, there's a clinical, it's called the clinical establishment regulations. I don't remember the exact name. It's the Clinical Establishment Act, under which you have to get yourself registered. And if, for instance, you want to get patients under Ayushman Bharat and different sort of like different subcategories, you have to be NABH, NABL approved. So the union is sort of making those standards there. And I think one of the big reasons that states have different registrations is they also want to maintain some kind of control over who is practicing in their state and who is not.
Yeah. Also, when the doctors have to apply for the registration, do they have to meet certain criteria over there? Or is it just like, I mean, they just have to give their own credentials and that's good enough? I'm asking this because if, I mean, maybe the states have some specific requirements, maybe a language requirement or something. So and that's...
I think the maybe the language criteria will come sometime later when people's colleges start teaching in vernacular languages. Maybe, for instance, you won't be able to practice in Karnataka if you did your MBBS in Hindi. Right now, there is no language restriction, but there are certain restrictions that you have to do after you get your registration. If I want my renewal of my registration, I want to have certain CME, like continued medical education points. These are different requirements for different states. And if I don't meet them, I won't be able to get registered in that state. So at the time of joining, there are no sort of mandatory, at least for language, there are no differences because it was all in English, but for registration. But there are certain, after you get registered, if you want to continue be registered in that state, you have to meet certain criteria, which are different for different states, and states maintain a certain level of control over them.
Yeah. So basically, these are some things you mentioned, but these are all apart from the licenses that you get from, I think, the Medical Council of India. Right, which is again at the union level. Okay, yeah. So at the union...
Basically, MCI, the erstwhile MCI, which is now NMC, National Medical Council, they give out licenses to open a medical college and you sort of get admission in an approved medical seat and the college follows all the regulation set out by NMC and you pass an exam which is according to the standards and regulations set out by NMC and after that, you get registered in the sort of the state you graduated from. So there's also, there used to be a MCI register as sort of like comparable to the state register of sort of doctors, but nobody gives any importance to that register. For instance, if I want to practice anywhere, this has happened to me in Delhi. If I'm MCI registered, I have to get that registration won't work in Delhi. So I have to get the Delhi Medical Council registration. After you graduate, there is the role of NMC sort of like decreases.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, so multiple institutions and multiple levels, right, of the federal structure, they are involved in this process. And one more thing, as you mentioned some time back about different kinds of contagious diseases, spread of different kinds of infectious diseases there. Again, the union has a role to play. So I would assume that, okay, why the union is having a role to play? Because again, this is a classic case of externality, right? If it is only the responsibility of the state government and the state government doesn't do it well, the other state governments will get impacted by it. So it makes sense for some form of intervention by the union government to ensure that other states, they are not at the receiving end. And again, one other option could have been the different states negotiate amongst themselves and ensure that the states which is not good in preventing spread of infectious diseases takes some measures, but these kind of negotiations are usually costly. That we already know about all these things, and maybe this bargaining will not happen. And it will, I mean, by the time you come up with a solution, maybe things become worse. So makes sense to have it under the control of a union government, maybe.
Yeah, there were also certain protests against the lockdown announced in March 2020. People said that central government should not be able to, does not have the requisite power to announce that. But finally, everybody sort of agreed and they invoked the Disaster Management Act, in which sort of the Ministry of Home Affairs invoked the Disaster Management Act, according to which the center can impose certain measures and sort of take action in disasters. So yeah, if we would have waited for a sort of a state-state cooperation and state-center state union cooperation, it may would have been too late.
Yeah. And also, I mean, we're not going into the details of how this particular power was used by the union government. Again, there are a lot of criticisms to that. But again, some role has to be there, which ensures that you don't have to depend on different states to negotiate amongst themselves to solve this.
Yeah, at least in health emergencies, in pandemics, I think the center has a bigger role to play.
Yeah. So, Harshit, what we'll do is we will see how these things have worked, right? How this assignment of different kind of roles to union government, to the state governments, and in some cases to the local bodies, how this constitutional assignment has worked, how has it been effective or not? But we'll do this after a short break. Welcome everyone from the break. So we were discussing about the assignment of different roles to the union government, state governments, and also some of these roles are assigned to local bodies. Now the question is how all these things are coordinated. Now there's a reason why we are having this question. So as we saw, most of the tasks, most of the services have to be provided by the state governments. On the other hand, if you look at the revenue generating capacities, if you look at the empirical evidence on that, the states do not have enough capacity to generate revenue, but they are the ones who have to provide for these services, right? Schools, hospitals, dispensaries, all these things. And on the other hand, the union government has some role to play when it comes to formulating policies, maybe deciding the larger frameworks, but it does not have to go and directly provide these services. It's the states which do that. But the revenue generating capacity of the union is much more than the states. Right? If you look at the way revenue is generated, large part of it is generated by the union government. And most of the broad-based taxes, taxes which have a larger base, they are with the union government. So money is with the union government, while the responsibility to carry out all these different tasks is with the state governments. So how do you balance that out? So we have some institutional mechanisms. For example, the Finance Commission, every 5 years, it decides that how much amount of money the state, the union has to transfer to the states. And some of these part is without any such conditions. These are all general purpose transfers. Apart from that, the Finance Commission might also provide for some sector-specific transfers that, okay, from the union government, whatever union government has collected, a part of it has to go to different sectors. And again, this has to be implemented by the states, right? Health can be one of those priority areas. Also, different ministries within the union government, right? They come up with different kind of schemes. And these are also specific purpose transfers. Right? For example, you have different centrally sponsored schemes. So under this scheme, the union government is going to spend money, but this has to be matched by the state government as well. So if the union government is spending 60 rupees, the state government has to match it. 40 rupees has to come from the state government if the total allocation is 100 rupees. And these ratios can vary. And these ratios can vary depending on what kind of scheme it is. And these ratios can also vary depending on what kind of states it is. Some states have even more difficulties finding revenue, and the unit cost of providing for different services is typically more in some of these states, especially states in the hilly region. So for them, the ratio can also be different, 90-10 or something else. So this is how the union government, despite it generating more revenue, decides to part some of it and gives it to the states, and the states use these revenue to provide different kind of services. Two things are happening here. The overall general infrastructure of the states, the general health infrastructure of the states can be improved. The general purpose transfers are for that. And the specific purpose transfers are for some specific component of healthcare. right? Maybe improving hygiene and sanitation or something else, right? So that is also used by the states to improve the level of service. So Harshit, how has all these things worked out, right? Has it worked out as seamlessly as I was talking about, or there have been some challenges here also?
No, so the most basic challenge is that the center is allotting the money and the states have to spend it. The states have to spend it and the center is making certain guidelines on how they have to spend it. If they are giving it, for instance, let us look at the example of National Health Mission. The center will give you a certain amount of money which you have to match. And when you match the money, there are certain guidelines and certain milestones which you have to meet and spend the money according to the wishes of the center. So the center is using a one size fits all policy. So instead of having a localized revenue collection and letting the states decide what they want to do with money, there's a centralization of decision making in Delhi, which is leading to sort of like optimum allocation of resources. And there is no, in most of these programs, they only sort of calculate or measure service level indicators. For instance, if the center is giving some amount of money to be invested in mother and child health, they will say that measure the number of expecting females who are getting iron and folic acid tablets. So the state will measure whatever is the number of females and say, this is, so you gave us money for 100, we gave it to 100. So this is done. Instead of measuring the outcome, instead of measuring what is the health of the mother, what is the health of the child whose mother got it.
Infant mortality rate and all those things, how much they have reduced over a period of time. Those kind of things.
First of all, there is centralization of decision making, not taking into account the diversity at local levels. Second, there is no political feedback. So for instance, if the central government is not making adequate or good health policies for a particular state, you cannot go and vote them out at that level and for that issue. And there's also data collection. Even the service level indicators, the data collection is quite bad. And these are some of the major issues. And one more issue is that how does the state allot the money? For instance, if they want to match look at states like Jharkhand. So they need more money. For instance, compare Jharkhand and Kerala. So Kerala, maybe they need 100 rupees per capita to improve the life expectancy by 1 month. And Jharkhand would need somewhere around 300 rupees, maybe 200 or 300 rupees. This is a rough hypothetical situation to improve their per capita to improve their life expectancy by 1 month. And so Jharkhand needs more fund, is a poor city.
So Harshit, what you are saying is for the same result, Jharkhand and Kerala will need different amounts of money.
Yeah. And the center is allotting, center wants you to match. So a lot of times states like Jharkhand, Bihar, they are not able to match even like 30-40%. States like Kerala and even Karnataka, they are able to match it. So the states which require more money to get a minimum level of health outcomes, they are not getting it. Because you also want a performance linked indicator, sort of like a matching indicator built into your funding mechanism, because there is centralization of power and centralization of fund disbursement.
Okay. So Harshit, the last two points that you mentioned, one is you mentioned that different states might require different amount of inputs to get the same result, right?
Yeah.
So Kerala is requiring more input, is requiring less inputs, while Jharkhand is requiring more inputs. So it basically gives you an idea that just giving money might not be enough. What is happening is this inputs are not getting translated into outputs because maybe the state capacity varies in these states, right? Maybe Kerala is much more efficient and Jharkhand is not as efficient. That's what is the point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So basically, we also have to counter in for the state capacity and accordingly, we have to go for it. But the question here is, one of the criticism of this method is maybe we are rewarding for inefficiency. That can be one of the criticism for this, right?
Yeah. So, that could be a reward for inefficiency and punishing you for making progress.
Progress.
For instance, we say that I think the ideal solution we discussed was that the state should ensure that X is the minimum level of health outcomes we want across the country. And the state will fund your state, the center will fund your state till you achieve that X level. So you are basically punishing the good performers.
So what you are trying to say here is a minimum level has the union government can identify that across the length and breadth of the country, this is the minimum level. And different states might be at a level lower than the specific minimum level. So this shortfall in service levels, they should decide the quantum of grants.
Right? Yeah.
And and actually that is something which is not happening, by the way, right now, right? You don't find out what is the exact service level, how much is required to reach a particular norm that should have been created, which is also not created. So that shortfall is not calculated. And as you were mentioning some time back that we don't have enough data, we do not have enough feedback. So all these things actually tie into one another, right? If you have that feedback loop, if you have enough data, you can find all these things and accordingly you can tie the grants. Or at least accordingly, you can decide the quantum of grants. Another point that you mentioned is the poorer states, right? They are at a disadvantage in the sense that the union government will give a part of the money and the state has to match it. So poorer states, many of them do not have that much amount of revenue. As a result of it, they're not able to match it. So they could have possibly spent more. They are not able to spend more amount of money. So one of the potential solution here is maybe have flexibility around it. Do not have a fixed matching ratio. That 60-40 ratio is applicable for all the states which are not in the northeastern region or which are the non-hilly states. Maybe within that also think about it. Some states like a Jharkhand or an Orissa or a Bihar might be at a higher disadvantage. Maybe they do not have enough capacity to generate revenue. So in those situations, maybe think of changing the matching ratio. I'm just giving an example here, not necessarily the states that I counted here are exactly the ones which have the worst revenue generation capacity. So the matching ratios can also be tweaked, yeah. Maybe.
Moderated. Go ahead. Yeah, so I think the ideal solution, according to me, would be that the resources are being generated at the state level. And they're distributing, and the state is distributing them to the local authorities, and the local authorities are using them according to sort of a plethora of policy toolkits or interventions which they are given, and they're using according to the local conditions. So you're generating money at state level and giving them out at district level.
Yeah. So for this also, the states have to improve their revenue generation capacity, right? And this is also, I mean, this is something that we have also discussed before, that many states in India, they have capacity to generate both taxes as well as non-taxes, and they have not leveraged this. Maybe they should focus on this so that they are self-sufficient and they do not completely depend on the union government for this. And also in the last few years, we have seen how between the union and states, there have been multiple issues related to GST compensation and a bunch of things. So if states focus on leveraging whatever existing powers they have to maybe increase their tax base or maybe leverage different other charges they can get for providing different services, that way their revenue will be more. And again, they can possibly use it in a bunch of other things, including healthcare.
So,
now, Harshit, go ahead.
Yeah, Sarthak, do we even propose that the center should shift some of its revenue generation streams to their respective states?
Yeah, so Harshit, maybe we can think about it. But again, usually there is some rationale behind this, how constitutional assignment happens for taxes. So again, let's say something like a corporate tax, right? If it is at the level of the state governments, it might so happen that the headquarters is somewhere, but the production is happening somewhere else. That might not be correct to have all the taxes that is being paid go to that specific state where you have the headquarters. But yes, there can be some changes in the constitutional assignment as well. For example, at this point of time, states, they are the ones who are supposed to collect taxes on agriculture. But most of the states in India do not collect any tax on agriculture. So there is a, if, and again, there are some studies which point out that somewhere around 0.6% of the GDP can be generated from taxes on agriculture. So maybe states can also leverage whatever existing things they have. And also they can generate taxes, not taxes, but they can generate different other kinds of revenues from maybe different kinds of services they provide to consumers. So Harshit, one or two other things that was there is, many times what happens is whatever existing allocation is there, right, from the union to the states, what happens is that is also whatever is promised that is not released, right? The approved allocation and the ultimate release, there also is variation for different kinds of specific transfers. Also, many times, or there have been instances where states, they have found out some loopholes as well. So what they will do is they will substitute their expenditures, their own expenditures, with the grants they're getting for a specific sector, right? They're getting a grant, they're getting grants for health sector maybe, but they will use that money for some other sector, as a result of which the sector's outcome doesn't improve. So I think all those things, right? Having more data, having feedbacks loops, or providing incentives on the basis of whether you are meeting that shortfall in service levels, all these things can plug in some of those things.
Yeah, I think there are certain issues with sort of like greater autonomy and greater allotment to states. But there are also, if there are certain issues, then there are also certain solutions to our problems. So, yeah, I think decentralization with greater resource generation by states and good feedback loops, and maybe decision making should be moved from center to district level. That will help a lot in improving health outcomes and basically making the system more accountable to the people.
Yeah. So thanks, Harshit, for these concluding thoughts. Thanks to the audience for plugging in. We'll meet again in one more episode of All Things Policy.
Thank you so much, Sarthak, for having me.
Yeah. Thank you.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week: Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.